This morning on WMUK, I have the privilege of talking to violinist Jessica Shuangwu of the Vega Quartet, appearing in Saugatuck for the Chamber Music Festival of Saugatuck this Thursday and Friday. Shows are at 7:30 p.m. at the Women's Club of Saugatuck. The Vega Quartet is quartet in residence at Emory University. In Jessica, thanks for chatting with me today.
Sure.
The Vega Quartet has a great origin story that really is tied to the residency at Emory University. You were telling me a little about it before we got started, so I wondered if you'd share with our listeners how the Vega Quartet and the school are tied together.
The Vega Quartet actually has a very long history because three of the members are originally from Shanghai, China. So we met each other actually when we were kids, starting playing string quartet in elementary school and middle school. And eventually we all came to this country and then to further our studies. And then we all went to New York City to three of us, me and the violist and the cellist went to Manhattan School of Music. And our first violin, Elizabeth, went to Juilliard. And so we were going to school in New York. And then after that, we had a dear friend. His name is William Ransom. And he's a director of the Emory Chamber Music Society in Atlanta. And he had invited us to play Beethoven cycle throughout the year 2003 and 2004 in Atlanta. Back then, they were just finished building this really magnificent concert hall. It's called Schwartz Performing Arts Center. And so we were one of the first groups to kind of, set this whole thing going. So we went to Atlanta for six concerts. So we would go, pretty much every month and spend a week in Atlanta. And then we not only would perform the Beethoven concerts, but we also got to, teach some of the students from the music department, and then really got to know a lot of people throughout the whole school. And so through that, we really feel that, it's such a good opportunity for us to kind of pursue this relationship with Emory. And then Mr. Ransom also had this vision that he always wanted to have a quartet in residency at Emory University. So it's a mutual kind of, understanding and then goal to make this happen. And then we also were very fortunate. The school is very supportive. And then we had a couple of private donors to help to set the whole thing in motion. So we moved from New York to Atlanta, starting the job 2006 ever since. And, the really cool thing that we think about our residency at Emory, one is that we are pretty much the only professional string quartet in the South, kind of in Georgia, in Atlanta area, that really is only doing string quartet, not just, a pickup group. And we're really the core also of the Emory Chamber Music Society. And we put on a lot of concerts throughout the year in the community. And we also go to actually a lot of different departments in the whole university to explore the relationship between music and all kinds of possible topics. We've done classes with the neuroscience, physics, literature, philosophy, religion, like anything you could think of. So we really think this is such a just very interesting way to really bring everybody together, to kind of explore the music scene and then just to keep the culture going, So I've been doing that for the past 13 years and loving it.
Can I go off topic for a short moment and ask about living in Atlanta? You were used to New York for a while and then you moved to Atlanta. Uh-huh. And what have you learned about the community and the city and the culture there that you really love?
Well, not to be cliche about it, but I love the Southern hospitality. I think in the South, especially Atlanta, the culture thing is very vibrant, actually. We just really, people are very supportive, and there's always a lot of people coming to our concerts, different age groups also. And we, I mean, New York, you know, of course, it's the center of a lot of, you know, cultural things and a lot of things happening. But also there's a lot of groups there. So you feel like sometimes you do compete with, you know, a lot of other musicians and all that. And then you, for me personally, I don't feel the connection to like a really close-knit community, that kind of feeling. But in Atlanta, you know, around Emory area and then just around the area, we play also, you know, places very close to Atlanta too, that you just feel like people really appreciate you being there, you know, the only group here. And just people really appreciate, you know, classical music, you know.
Wow, I'm glad to hear it.
Really, yeah, yeah.
Well,
it's a big family, you know, it's very nice, yeah.
You're doing a lot to foster those connections, being, you know, the first quartet in residence at Emory University. You're kind of paving the road for all future ensembles there. And I imagine it's such an important part of what you do. Jessica, you're bringing a wonderful program to the Chamber Music Festival of Saugatuck, and I wonder if we could talk about the three pieces on the program. I'm surprised to see Opus 1, Number 1 by Franz Josef Haydn.
I know. Isn't that great?
Yeah. So you went way back to the beginning.
So there's actually Opus 1, Number 1. There's also Opus 2. We kind of discovered Opus 2 first. So this was a few... While we were still back in New York, we played, you know, Lincoln Center, mostly Mozart in the summer. They were doing all the Haydn quartets. So we were one of the groups that assigned sort of, you know, like 10 quartets. Okay, here you go. You're going to play these 10 quartets. And so we were actually playing Opus 2, Number 2 and 4 and 6. Then later we also discovered there's Opus 1. So we just thought it's such a great starting point because, you know, we always consider Haydn sort of the father of string quartets, really started writing for this particular genre. And now we have Opus 1, Number 1, you know, the first kind of published piece. So every time we play this, we, you know, try to imagine, also try to tell audience, you know, imagine this is what back then people were hearing probably for the first time, string quartet, you know. So that's really interesting for us to start a program like that.
Right. For the listeners who don't know, Haydn gets the credit for establishing the string quartet as a popular form of music, as a popular genre. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote dozens and dozens of quartets after that.
Yeah. Yeah. He wrote around, I think, 64, around that, yeah, quartet.
So Number 1, is it juvenile? Is it like sort of half-baked? Or what are you hearing in this piece?
It's very bright and optimistic. It's just really, it has five movements. They're all pretty short. And there's kind of a mirror image being, the third movement being the kind of the keystone, a slow, beautiful slow movement in the middle. And the first and the last movement are kind of a little faster. And then the second and fourth movement are two menuets. So it's very balanced.
I'm speaking with Jessica Shuang Wu, who is a violinist with the Vega Quartet. That's V-E-G-A. The program this Thursday and Friday opens with the very first quartet by Franz Josef Haydn. Then we have a piece by David Garner, and it's called 13 Fiddle Tunes for String Quartet. I ain't broke, but I am badly bent. So would you tell us about David Garner and the piece he wrote?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So this piece, David Garner is in his mid-30s, and I believe he's teaching right now at University of South Carolina in Columbia. And he got his PhD from Duke University, and he's a native Atlantan, I guess, born and raised here. And he is somebody that he plays the banjo, And he really loves folk music and then go hiking and then you know, all these like just back to nature and then Irish folk tunes and Appalachian mountains. He just loves all that. And, you know, bluegrass, fiddle tunes and all that. So he wrote this piece. It's 13 very short movements and they're all kind of connected to, together. And we love it because we think that he really used the modern Western composition technique and then just perfectly blended with this traditional sound, you know, the some of the tunes that people know. And they're just a perfect combination. You know, you don't lose the soul of the folk music, but then you also hear this modern kind of the technique that he used. There's something you can hear like a echo through the mountain. You know, we're playing one after each other, shadowing each other, or sometimes four of us will be playing exactly the same thing, but just a note apart. So to create this, like you're in the mountain, you know, you're speaking, but then you hear the echo coming back. So all sorts of things that is just a very, very cool piece, we think.
It's wonderful how modern classical ensembles like string quartets these days are required by modern composers to adapt their sound to things like African rhythms, to fiddle styles, to many folk instruments from around the world. It's just another set of tools that as a professional musician, you and your colleagues are adding into your toolkit.
Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting for us to learn, too. And in this piece, actually, and then you will hear that he actually doesn't require us to do so much of the traditional fiddle player. Because I think if he really wanted that, he could have, you know, just had some fiddle players to play this. So he's kind of still staying true to the general Western, you know, string instruments technique. But then he just kind of did something that to it, the way that he wrote it, and I guess maybe constructed, you know, together, and then make it sound like more, I guess, more folky. But still, you will hear. You won't lose the sense of classical music. You know, it's just a very smooth combination, I think.
The Vega Quartet will finish its program on Thursday and Friday with the String Quartet number 13 in B-flat major opus 130 by Ludwig van Beethoven. And there's an interesting story about the publishing of this work, I think, where Beethoven's publisher came back and said, it's so long, you need to drop the final movement and maybe find something shorter. Do I have my facts kind of correct on that?
Pretty much, yes. Yeah, people were shocked to hear the last fugue movement, you know, the grosso fugue itself is 15 minutes. After you heard his five beautiful movements, it's already maybe, I don't know, half an hour long or something, you know, back then. And also all the harmonies are so modern. So people, yeah, pretty much were shocked. There's a story, actually, when this piece was premiered, Beethoven didn't want to be there. So he kind of just hit somewhere in the pub down the road, you know, from the concert place. And then after the concert, they send the second violin, bring the brave one to go tell Beethoven how it went. So Beethoven asked him, so how did it go? And the second violin said, oh yeah, you know, everything went great. The second movement, the fourth movement, and you know, they really loved it. And then they asked her to even play twice. But the grosso fugue, not so much. But then Beethoven basically just told them, well, this is not written for them. This is for people, you know, 200-300 years after, you know.
So did he remove the final movement, the grossa fuga, and replace it with something else?
He did. He because, you know, for request by the publisher back then. And they just really think, you know, that's something that the audience would not really accept and understand. So by request, he did write an alternate last movement, which is actually the very last piece he ever wrote after his last quartet, which is Opus 135. So the last movement, the alternate movement that he wrote, was the last piece he wrote. It was a much lighter kind of in nature, in character.
When the Vega Quartet got together to decide on this program, how many of you wanted to do the revised quartet, and how many of you were championing the original with the Grosse Fuga?
I think the decision is, you know, we do do both ways. One is depend on how we feel, and the other also largely also depends on what the presenters wanted, you know, because we did the 130 with the alternate movement, not the Grosse Fuga, last fall in Amsterdam in the Concertgebouw, actually. But that back then was also the presenter there. They actually asked us. We asked it, do you want it, you know, to be presented with the Grosse Fuga or you want the alternate movement? They're like, oh, no, we don't want it. This is a little too heavy. So we wanted the alternate movement to go with it. So this time, I believe actually we were also asked by the presenter in Sagataga that I think we asked, would you like, you know, which movement would you like? They're like, yes, yeah, we want the Grosse Fuga. Okay, great.
It's mind-blowing. You know, what Beethoven is doing in this piece, it is, you know, you can hear it over and over and over, and it's just so modern and so shocking, and it takes you to a whole different plane of existence, I think.
For sure, for sure. And then before that, you have the famous cavatina, which is really literally traveling in space right now, you know, because it was picked by NASA to be on one of the golden records, you know, that's traveling in space right now. We don't know where it is.
It's among the stars, yeah. Like the Vega Quartet.
Among the stars, yes.
Well, does the Vega Quartet have any exciting projects or plans coming up in the next season or two you can tell us about?
Yeah, well, since next year is Beethoven's 250th anniversary, so we are doing the Beethoven cycle at Emory, which we have done once before in 03 and 04. So next year in 2020, we're going to do 6 concerts. I believe it's in January, March, and April. And then we'll do 3 in the fall as well in 2020. I think that'll probably be one of our biggest projects. For this coming season, yeah.
Yeah, it's very tempting to get in the car and take a ride down to Atlanta for some Beethoven.
Oh, just fly down here. It's not that far.
It's been great to talk to you. I wish you the best for your concerts this week, and we'll keep track of the Vega Quartet in the future. I appreciate talking to you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.